This is episode 008 of The Bad Apples. Welcome to The Bad Apples. We use Macintosh computers in the most extreme and sometimes least intended manner. We know all the tricks and all the answers. We are the geeks you avoided in school and now come running to when your SMTP server changes their port on you. New to Macs? Stick around, you'll learn something. Old school Apple user? Grab a cup of coffee, sit down, let's talk about ProDOS, Beagle Brothers, and the weirdest line commands this side of the GUI.
With an adult in a car is like a shabby room. It doesn't sound very exciting.
Gort has gone off and played with emulators, and he's back. He's returned with some interesting program. So, Gort, what exactly is it? What have you been playing with?
It's a little application known as Q, spelled K-J-U, believe it or not. Kilo Juliet Uniform, for those who know the phonetic alphabet. What is it? Well, the Intel Macs obviously have a well-publicized ability to run various forms of Windows. Most versions of Windows are known primarily for being horribly insecure and very susceptible to viruses. Of course, one of the very popular methods of running Windows on your Mac is a program known as Parallels. It's software that emulates the Windows box in your Mac. In fact, what Parallels actually does, it sets up a virtual machine in which Windows is run. Now, this opens up a whole host of security walls between your real machine and the emulated virtual machine. Parallels sells for about $80 for the desktop version and integrates itself really well with Mac OS X, and it will emulate a good variety of x86 compatible operating systems. The emulator that I use is completely free, and it's just as flexible, perhaps even more so, than Parallels. Again, that's Q. It's a Cocoa port of a larger open source project known as QEMU, Q-E-M-U, and you can find it at www.kju-app.org/kju. It's a virtual machine client that will safely run Windows, a number of Linux distributions like BSD and others, and even, hey, this is really neat, Mac OS 9.04, and in some cases even earlier. Obviously, it's easiest to run the big popular operating systems, but running an emulation of especially Windows is a lot safer than partitioning your hard drive and dual booting into the real full-blown Windows. It's also a neat way to experience some of the other OSs that are out there, like different Linux distros, most of which are free, without having to actually install them on your hard drive or run off of a live CD, which sometimes is slow. The downside of running Windows, even within emulators, is that you'll have to already have a Windows disk, or you'll have to purchase one. Purchasing a copy of Windows means actually writing a check to Microsoft, and obviously they don't really care whether you're running it under an emulator or a dedicated PC. So hopefully, if you really need to run Windows at all, well, maybe you've got an old copy laying around. Otherwise, see if the software you need is available in a Mac OS X version, or maybe even X11 or Linux. It's a much better choice. Okay, that's it for this week. That's this week's cool Mac app.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Gort is the captain of a very large starship. He does a lot of sysadministration, actually. He's not a captain, but he does do a lot of the sysadmin. And so one of the things that he does a lot is start up computers. And it turns out there's actually quite a bit that you can do when you're booting up your system, and Gort's going to tell us all about it.
Let's see, starting up your computer, yes. I've got a few tricks here. You know, it seems like such an easy, passive thing. But, you know, you're starting this great, powerful machine. But all you do is press the on button and wait around while it boots. Of course, there are ways to make it more interactive, some of which most of us know and love, and others are a bit more obscure. You remember under OS 9, we used to have to boot up without extensions when we suspected there was a problem. Maybe some couple of components were competing for the same digital space and memory. Well, it's not so common these days, of course, but it's still a troubleshooting option that you can use. It's called booting into the safe mode. You do this by holding down the shift key. This boots the basic system, but a lot of the usual embellishments that you're accustomed to using won't be functioning, including any login items that you may have set to automatically run. The one I think most Mac users know is starting up from a CD or DVD. You hold down the C key while starting up. It's written in the user's guide, in the quick start guide, and all that stuff. That, of course, bypasses your primary boot volume, whatever it is, whether it's internal or external. Typically, it'll start from your optical drive, assuming that you do have a bootable disk in there. A variation of this is to hold down the Apple Option Shift Delete while starting up. That bypasses your startup volume and seeks another bootable volume. If there is a CD or DVD that's bootable in your drive, it'll boot from that. But you could also boot from an external drive, like a rescue volume, if you ever needed to. The less drastic version of that is to press the Option key immediately after applying power, which scans the system for bootable volumes and lets you choose a volume from which to boot. Most of us are used to this, either having done it to boot into OS 9 or OS 10, or these days, you actually have people booting into Windows for some unknown reason. I can't imagine doing it myself, but I'm told there are people that do it. Another good troubleshooting recovery trick is to start up while holding the mouse button down. If you've gotten a CD or DVD stuck in your optical drive, or your system has crashed, and you need to get a disk that's in the drive out so that you can insert another disk, like a recovery disk, of course, you hold down the mouse button immediately after applying power, and that will force the disk to eject. Now, if you're having a problem starting up your system, you can also try holding down the X key while booting. This will force an OS startup, ideally. If it doesn't, you're probably back to your recovery disk efforts. Now, if you're having problems with your laptop screen, you can force a screen reset by holding down the R key. Obviously, if it's a pure hardware problem, that's probably not going to do anything for you, but it's a good way to reset the resolution or any pixels that are acting funny before you assume that it is a hardware problem. Just another troubleshooting step along the way. Now, the T key, that's Tango, boots your Mac into the target disk mode. That is, as a firmware slave drive, if you have it plugged into the FireWire port of another Mac. A lot of people are using this method now that the latest version of Tiger has a migration assistant. But it's also a handy way to transfer really large files that would just be too slow and cumbersome to send over a wireless network. Maybe insecure if it's data that's sensitive and you don't want anybody to intercept it. So that's a good way to do that. That's your T key. All right, and here's one for you, Klaatu. Next time you boot your machine, hold down Apple V. That starts it in the verbose mode. You'll see a lot of the behind-the-scenes BSD shell activity before Aqua actually kicks in. Of course, to bypass the GUI entirely, you can boot into the single-user mode by holding down the Apple S while you're starting up. This happens to be a glaring security hole, as it bypasses entirely any login prompt, and in the right hands, it could really mean that your data is entirely unsecure. It requires physical access to your computer, of course, but it's something to be aware of. There's a way to lock this up, but I'll leave that for a different episode. A single-user mode, as innocuous as it sounds, happens to be really, really dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. If you play around with this and do it wrong, you can actually render your machine unbootable. Not a good idea. It's one of those don't try this at home, folks. This one's an easy one. If you've got a program that you're always using, you can have it come on automatically at login pretty easily by control-clicking on its icon in the dock. Some of the options that most of us have subliminated by now are actually fairly useful. There's Open at Login, and of course the Keep in Dock and Show in Finder. So if it's something you're frequently using and you need open, it's only a control click away. Otherwise, you can set it in the system preferences, but who wants to suffer through all those clicks? Okay, that's your cool Mac hack for the week.
Hey, it sounds like you finished just in time, Gort. I think it's time for a coffee break. And all of you listeners at home, you can feel free to go get yourself a cup of coffee as well and rejoin us in a moment.
Coffee? On the mess deck. Say half an hour.
And now for an explanation of macOS 10's intentions for administrators, users, backing up, and more. Now, coming from either Windows, a single-user environment, or from Apple ProDOS, or macOS 7, or 8, many people are used to having a single-user computer. You go out, you buy the computer, you bring it home, turn it on, you use it. And if anyone else is using it, they're your friend, and they just use it because you trust them, you know them. They're not going to screw anything up. But Nix systems are, by their very nature, multi-user. They're multi-thread. That's why Unix was developed. So that's what it is. And in these cases, the person, you have to kind of get outside of the traditional thought process. You have to think of yourself as someone who, you go out, you purchase the computer, you bring it home, you own the physical computer. It's made of plastic and metal. You're the administrator of that computer. So forget for a moment that your new computer is the coolest thing you've gotten in years. Forget that you're going to be using it every day for the next couple of years. Just put it on your business cap and think of yourself as the investor, the owner, the administrator. So why am I saying this? Well, because the Unix file system is set up so that you, the owner of the physical computer, are the administrator, and the administrator has no data. You don't need to back up. If your hard drive died today, all you, as the administrator, would have to do is reinstall the system software, a couple of applications, and you're done. Now, of course, in real life, you are also a user. Take off your administrator hat and put on your backward baseball cap and turn yourself into the everyday Joe who wants to just sit down, use the computer to get things done. The reason that we use Macs in the first place, right? It's because we can just sit down and do things. They're fun, they're easy, they're stable. So you, as the user, you've got data files of all different kinds on your computer, and you want to keep them forever. You've got financial records you need, you've got vacation photos, you've got portraits, you've got music that you've composed, videos you've made. You've got stuff that you need access to, you need it organized, and you need most of all, you need it all backed up. Now for all of this, the Unix file system provides you with a user folder on the physical computer. And it's a really good idea to make sure that you're playing nice with Unix, and you keep your files inside of your user folder. No, it doesn't have to be within the pictures, music, documents, you know, that whole preset set of folders that it gives you. You can always add more, although a lot of programs are trying to take advantage of this standardized structure. So if you utilize the preset folders, you might find that you're integrating more with the software that you're using. But whatever the case, you keep your personal data in your own user folder, even if you are the only person ever using your computer. Don't store files out on the hard drive next to the system folder or the system library. Now, the desktop is fair ground because, as you'll notice, if you go to your user folder, the desktop is technically a folder in your user folder. So why is it done this way? Isn't it restrictive and tyrannical to make you do things this way? Well, not really. It's just structured. You see, creating a preset folder is important in media management, and that's why iTunes and iPhoto and Aperture and Final Cut Pro and Logic and a lot of very good applications reference files outside of themselves, and in order for them to have a consistent file path to find that data, it helps to have the preset structure for them to refer to. And, you know, you can always change the location of, for instance, your music folder or your photo library or your Aperture library, and you just let the software know that you've changed it, and it can update it fine. But the presets are a good place to start. And furthermore, it's very helpful to know that when you're backing up, you're really getting all of your data safely. And how do you know this? Well, because the only data that really matters to you will be inside of one folder, and that is your user folder. It's as simple as that. Your applications can all be reinstalled from their disks. Your system library and preferences will just be rebuilt with a reinstall if the situation is that drastic. And everything else is purely the administrator's headache. But your personal data is safe in your user folder, and your user folder can be backed up with minimal thought and effort. Because when you're establishing your consistent backup plan, if all you have to do is say, yeah, back up my user folder, that makes it really easy. As opposed to saying, okay, we'll back up this folder here, and that folder there, and then this folder here, and that folder there, and all of these different folders that may change because you're moving things around, and it's just going to be a constant question of whether you're really getting all of your data. If it's all in the user data, in the user folder, don't worry, you're getting it. What about getting a new computer? Well, it's going to happen at some point. Well, ever since Tiger, there's a migration assistant to help transfer all of your old data to your new computer. So if you want it to be that easy, and just you plug one computer into the other and you click OK and Mac OS X does it all for you, then you'll need to play along with the Mac OS X file system. Is there another way to accomplish all of this? Well, sure. There could be some kind of metadata marker to show the computer what's user data and what is system data, and we could all be in like Mac OS 9.999 waiting for Apple to reinvent the wheel with an efficient multi-threading operating system for current dual-core chips with a stable environment and a great interface. But then we'd be Vista owners, and Apple would be Microsoft. But we aren't, and it isn't. So let's be Unix users and treat Mac OS X like the users that we are, and treat the computer like the administrators we are. And I think you're going to be glad that you did.
And then you get to be a super looper!
I'm not necessarily what you would call a speed demon, but sometimes there are little things in an OS that seem to take an inordinate amount of time. And as they accumulate over years of using that operating system, it just starts to get a little bit old. And not to mention that the older Macintoshes, as I continue to use them with newer and newer operating systems, of course the response time does go down. So a lot of times every second that you can squeeze out of certain actions is much appreciated. Now if you can think about when you go to save a file out of a program, or when you go to print a file out of a program, think about that little pane that comes down, kind of slides out and rolls down of your window. And it typically, depending on the size of that save as pane or that print pane, sometimes it takes a second or 2 seconds to actually appear on your screen. For what it is, the animation, the kind of the feel of things flowing and rolling out and sliding down, things like that, that's very nice, and it was nice for a very long time. But sometimes, especially again on my older Macs, I do just as well without that sort of visual treat. And maybe you would like to see how that's done as well. It's quite easy. You just open up your terminal and you type in defaults, spacebar write, that's W-R-I-T-E, spacebar dash G. So that's the minus sign and the letter G, and then the spacebar. Capital N, capital S, that's in S as in next step. And then the word window resize time. So the capitals there is the N and the S, and then the W-R-T. And that's all written out together. So it's in S, window resize time. And then another space. And then let's say .01. Now, you will have to open up an application fresh to see the new change take place. So if you're running something right now and you type that in and then expect to go to print or save and see that animation, it won't happen. But if you quit that application and relaunch it, or if you just want to see it, just launch a new application and go ahead and try to save a document or print it and just see how quickly it works. I think you might like it. If you want to change it, you're certainly welcome to change it back to something else. On the other hand, if you're really, really in love with painfully slow processes, you can change it to a lot longer. But either way you do it, enjoy. Well, that was it. That was episode 008, Mechanics of the Bad Apples. For show notes, downloads, free wallpapers, stuff like that, visit our website at thebadapples.5gbfree.com. That is thebadapples.5gb, as in gigabytes, free.com. If you want to email us, give us feedback, have a question or a tip or something like that, or a correction, you can email us at thebadapples. No, you can't. You can email us at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort, G-O-R-T, dot klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, @gmail.com. Music for this lovely show has been provided by Fat Chance Lester, recorded in the legendary Sound Shop, New York City, 43rd Street. Other material provided by archive.org. Go check it out. The contents of this show is licensed under the Creative Commons license, or some such thing as that. In other words, we got nothing. No legal protection, no legal representation. You want to use parts of the show? Go for it. Tune in next time for more Macintosh memories, Mac hacks, and Mac apps with the Bad Apples.
Funny, my little bunny.